Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
What can life in a South Central Iowa coal mining town over a century ago teach us about race relations today? Let's go in depth with Rochelle Chase, author of Creating the Black Utopia of Buxton, Iowa. Rochelle, tell us a little bit about Buxton.
Well, Buxton was a coal mining town. It was established in 1900 by the Consolidation Coal Company, which was owned by the Chicago Northwestern Railroad. And what was really unique about it is, again, it was 1900. It had 5,000 residents. But most of the population, 40 to 50% of the population, was black for most of its existence. And then even on top of that, blacks and whites were treated equal. So you had black people and white people as neighbors. You had their children going to the same schools and being taught by black and white teachers. You had, in addition to miners, you had black people, business owners. They were doctors, lawyers, dentists, educators, et cetera, and leaders in the community. So this was something that was very, very unique for that time, for 1900. So that's kind of a summary of Buxton.
And it's just at the edge of the Mahaska-Monroe County border, right?
Yep, it straddled both sides. It was mainly, most of it was in on the Monroe County side, but it did straddle into Mahaska as well.
And so it was a big community at one time, and now there's virtually nothing there.
Yeah, unfortunately there's not. The estimate seems to be around 5,000 residents in its heyday, which it was the largest unincorporated town here in Iowa, and some people have said in the nation at that time. I have not been able to validate that latter claim, but it was a good-sized town.
Well, and what's interesting to me is, well, and I think to everybody that hears the story of Buxton, is that everybody just pretty much worked side by side, got paid the same, had the same mm-hmm. lifestyles, same opportunities. And from, you know, your interviews, you're talking with people, your historical research, it seems that it was a really nice place.
Yeah, it was. And again, that was very rare for that time. People were, you know, even though like my current book, you know, says, you know, has the word utopia in it, I'm using that loosely to refer to this would have been for that time, black people would have looked at this as kind of a utopia given what was going on in the country at that time. But there was racism. You know, people did come with, you know, you have people coming from the South that have their own perception. You have white people that have never lived around black people or maybe not even wanted to. So people are coming with their own, you know, perceptions. Like when I listened to some of the interviews, I did hear some of the numerous white people refer to black people, you know, using the N-word, attributing some of the success that some of the lighter skinned black people had due to the fact that they weren't full blacks. Conversely, one of the black gentlemen interviewed said that his grandparents had tried to encourage the kids not to trust white people. One of the other white residents said he didn't feel comfortable going to the Y because there were mainly, you know, black people there. He didn't feel like he was welcome. So my point is people did come, you know, with their own preconceived ideas. But what was really remarkable about the town is despite that, people, you know, they got along. There was, according to all the residents and that were interviewed, and also from what headlines I can find, you know, detailing, you know, murders or violence that did happen in Buxton, none of it appears to have been racially motivated. If there was anything, it seemed like it was a domestic dispute or gambling related or some kind of, you know, fight for some reason, drinking. So again, you did have, you know, signs of racism, but again, it wasn't that violence. It wasn't the display of it. Everybody pretty much did get along in Buxton.
More in depth after this.
I can continued my conversation about Buxton, Iowa, with author Rochelle Chase. Everybody that's paying attention knows that there's protests across the nation with respect to brutality, murders of mainly young black men, Black Lives Matter protests all over, many of them throughout Iowa too. And are there any lessons from Buxton for today in this very turbulent time? And then toss in COVID-19 in the mix too, but it's just,
right.
I mean, there's a lot going on. Can Buxton teach us any lessons?
I do think so, because again, the amazing fact about this town, when you look at 1900 compared to today, and even before 1900, 1873, which is when, you know, Mutchikanic, the town before Buxton, started, to have a town literally in the middle of farmland here in a state that's 99.3% white at that time, and to have black people and white people living together and black people being treated equal. This was at a time of extreme racism and violence against African Americans, the Ku Klux Klan, literally even in the farming communities around Buxton. My point is, you had a time that was even more, there was more violence against black people than even today. So how did this town exist then at this time, you know, kind of in the middle of Iowa farmland in that time of history? Well, I think what we can learn from that is, one, is the impact of strong leadership, meaning the founders of Buxton and of Mutchikanic before pretty much had said that blacks were going to be treated equal. And if you cannot accept that as someone who lived in this town, then you were not welcome there. So you have leadership, you know, setting an example, leading by example, saying this is the way things are going to be here. Then you have the people in the town who are also leaders. You have, you know, Buxton had no police force because it was an unincorporated town. So you had community members that were justices of the peace or constables also saying, you know, maintaining the peace and saying, okay, this is the way this town is going to be. Even more importantly, you have people being treated equal. You have the fact that, you know, what, like one of the residents had said was that, you know, he said something like everybody got along because, you know, they were making good money, you know, they had a good life. Well, I think there's some truth to that. When you have, you're giving everybody equal access to the same opportunities, equal pay, there's no, the sky's the limit to your success. You know, what is there really to fight about? What is there really to, even if you do have some racist tendencies, what is there really to fight about? Mm-hmm. And then you're able to look at things a little bit differently. Maybe you're a little bit able to be open to, you know, black people that you've never been around to say, you know what, maybe things aren't like I thought they were. And conversely, you know, with black people. So I do think there are things that we can learn from that, from Buxton.
More in depth after this.
Continued my conversation about Buxton, Iowa, with author Rochelle Chase. Well, I know I've got listeners that say that are thinking right now, this is America, anybody can be anything that they want to be, and there's nothing holding anyone back. Systemic racism doesn't exist. Racists are, you know, pretty much in a minority and are probably not behind the Black Lives Matter movement. Do you have anything you'd like to share with them?
Well, I really think that comes from looking at life through your own lenses, you know, your own experience, to say that, you know what, this is what, you know, this is what my life is like. This is what I perceive, you know, life to be like. People don't know the history of black people in this country. It is glossed over in, you know, in education, it's glossed over in the news, it's glossed over in the media, it's glossed over everywhere. So to understand, you know, the fact that ever since, you know, black people have arrived in this country, that there have been systematic things to keep them down, be it racism, white supremacy, you know, laws saying you can't do this, all of these things, burning up, you know, all the massacres that happened, you know, throughout the country when black people did succeed. There's all of these things constantly being put on black people to say, you know what, you are less than, you are not going to be better than, you are not going to be equal to us. We're going to do everything possible to make sure that doesn't happen. So people, for some reason, they don't believe that exists. They don't believe that, you know, that there was redlining. They don't believe that any of these things are. Affirmative action is just black people looking for another handout. I mean, there's this perception of this worthlessness, in a sense, of black people. And part of that, I believe, is because it is never taught. It is never taught all the contributions that black people have made to this country. It is never taught, you know, that during slavery even, there were countless of inventions that were made by enslaved people and black people, that, you know, the Reconstruction era when we were free, you know, all the things we accomplished that were then taken away when that short period of time ended. So that's a long answer to what you asked. I really believe part of the problem is people need to make an effort to learn, to be open, and to learn about what black people have experienced in this country, how that continues to affect us today, and also the contributions that we have made all throughout building the foundation of this country, and we continue to do today.
Yeah, I was in another interview the other day when somebody reminded me that during my lifetime, I think when I was like 11 or 12 years old, that in some places in the South, black women couldn't vote in my lifetime. And that's
Wow.
I mean, that's just, it's just hard for us to believe it. But the other people would still say, well, that's still in the past, Bob. What about today?
Oh my gosh.
I mean,
right.
What does that have to do with today?
Well, and that's it. You know, you say, oh, that's in the past, Bob, but that's like not very far in the past. You know, I mean, when you look at some of these things, when people said, oh, everybody has had the same opportunities or we've had these opportunities. Well, yes, white people have had these opportunities all throughout, you know, the existence of being here in this country. Black people have not had those opportunities all throughout the existence of the time in this country. So to say that everything is equal and that, well, you know, I was able to do it, or I did this. It's like, I just, again, there's not that understanding of what the black experience in this country is really, has really been, and how it continues to be affected today.
Well, I think maybe part of the issue is lack of experience, lack of dialogue, in the sense that many of our counties in Iowa, they're like 97% white. And so there's not a lot of interaction to try to understand the personal experience of black friends and acquaintances for white people.
Sure. Well, there may not be, but there are a ton of books, you know, there's a ton of movies, there's tons of resources that are available to expand that. And, you know, even if you don't know, you know, the experience, the being, I guess, this having this openness to when you see something that, you know what, rather than just saying, oh, you know what, I don't understand, black lives don't matter, all lives matter, or these things that just, you know, reinforce what you already believe. It's like, well, why not think, you know what, let me look and see, what does that really mean? Why are these people really saying black lives matter? What is really behind this? It's not, regardless of whether you live somewhere where everyone's, you know, the same race as you or not, you can still find the answers to those questions.
Well, and I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that don't support the Black Lives Matter movement. What do you have to say to them?
Well, there's so many people that have addressed this. You know, at this point, to be honest, I don't know what to say, because when you look at this and you try to explain the meaning behind that saying Black Lives Matter does not mean that all lives don't matter. It means that right now, you know, and in the past, black people are being killed and experiencing police brutality and violence at a higher rate than white people. So we're saying black lives matter. They matter just as much. So when you say all lives matter, you're taking the emphasis off of that and saying, you know what about me? what about me? And it's like, it's not about you at this moment. It's about, we're saying that, of course, all lives matter. But we're talking about right now the fact that this is happening disproportionately to Black people. So my point is, when people don't get that, when you just can't, you keep saying this over and over, or you give people like, okay, here's another example, here's another example, here's another example, here's a book, here's a this, and there's this constant resistance, I honestly don't know what the answer to that is.
Any last thoughts you'd like to share today with our listeners?
Just that, you know, the flip side is, you know, it is good to see that, you know, with the protests, that there are some, you know, some changes that are happening out of it. And I personally have had conversations, you know, with people where they're, you know, they're like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that before, or I didn't really understand this. I mean, I did, but I didn't really feel it, or I didn't really know about it. And it is great to see that, you know, there's some honest conversations and honest dialogue, and just some good things, you know, coming out of this. It's just horrible that this is what it took. But it is good to see that some people are trying to be open and trying to change.
Thanks to Rochelle Chase for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.